him, he worshipped Lord Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is natural that when someone belonging to one's family circle is understood to be very great, one becomes ecstatic in love, thinking, oh, such a great personality is our relative. When Sri Krishna, who was already known to the Pandavas, was further described by Narada Muni to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally the Pandavas were amazed, thinking, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is with us as our cousin. Certainly their ecstasy was extraordinary. And also text 79, I'll just read the translation. Narada Muni, being worshipped by Krishna and Maharaj Yudhisthira, bade them farewell and went away. Yudhisthira Maharaj, having heard that Krishna, his cousin, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was struck with wonder. Purport. After hearing the conversation between Narada and Yudhisthira, if one still has any doubts about Krishna's being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should immediately give them up. Asamshayam samagram. Without any doubt and without any defect, one should understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus surrender at his lotus feet. Ordinary persons do not do this. Even after hearing all the Vedas. But if one is fortunate, although it may be even after many, many births, he comes to this conclusion, Mahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namini Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaudavani Prachari Nini Vishesha Shunyavari Kastra Tyanti Satani. In one sense, it's a little surprising that Maharaj Yudhisthira was surprised. Because, after all, he's Maharaj Yudhisthira, he's Bharatarshava. He's the best amongst the Bharata dynasty. And the Pandavas are eternal associates of Krishna. The indication is that whenever Krishna appears in this world and performs his pastimes, Arjuna is always there, the Pandavas are always there to associate with and assist Krishna. So how is it he didn't understand that Krishna is the Personality of Godhead? And the answer is to allow for intimacy, just like Arjuna, although Yudhisthira is the best of the Bharatas, then there's also Arjuna, who is the dearmost friend of Krishna. And as the dearmost friend of Krishna, how could he not know that Krishna was the Personality of Godhead? Same answer. To permit the intimacy of loving friendship. And in that intimacy of loving friendship, he treated Krishna just like his friend. And as he described after realizing in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is disclosing directly his identity as the Personality of Godhead. Arjuna made profuse apologies. I've treated you like my friend. We've sat on the same seat together and eaten together and laid down together and we've spent so many intimate moments together, but you're the Personality of Godhead. please forgive me for those transgressions. So to allow for that intimacy, Arjuna was, by Krishna's influence, placed in a position where constant recognition of Krishna's supremacy was not to be found. Again, to permit intimacy. So same here, Maharaj Yudhisthira is, he's just heard from Narada, this cousin, he's the personality of Godhead. And Maharaj Yudhisthira is astonished. And he's feeling great ecstasy in that astonishment. Our cousin, he's the personality of Godhead. And worshipped him. There's so I want to make a point here, the point of the importance of hearing from a qualified personality like Narada. In Arjuna's case, Krishna directly disclosed his identity, both by speaking. In the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he disclosed Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, Atak Sarvam Pravartate, etc. He described his position as the absolute truth. Hearing that from Krishna, Arjuna speaks his famous verse, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. You are the Supreme Personality of God, at the Supreme Abode, Supreme Purifier. You're not just my friend. You're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then later, by Arjuna's asking Krishna to disclose his Virat Rupa, his universal form, again confirmed, it's not just Krishna's talking. Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavad Gita. It's not just because Krishna's bragging and here's his friend, oh, you're great. There's potency in the words of Krishna, and when one hears them properly, one becomes transformed. One can have realization of Krishna through just that sound vibration. Same happened here. This wasn't Krishna speaking, it was Narada speaking, and the speaking of Narada was so, had such an impact on Yudhisthira, that intimacy of my cousin spirit was removed, and the reality, Krishna is the personality of Godhead, was disclosed. There's great potency in hearing instructions. I'm going to get to a book distribution, Ra-Ra, Sis, Boom-Ba, in a moment. That's where we're going. Because how are people in this world going to understand Krishna as the personality of Godhead? There has to be a degree of receptivity. There's a very nice example, a parallel with this, when in Mahabharata, when there was a plan to kill Bhima by poisoning him. It's very intriguing, one of the turning points in Mahabharata, when the first plan of killing the Pandavas, and specifically in this case killing Bhima, was proposed by Duryodhana to his father. He didn't just do it without consulting his father. He told his father, I can't stand being on the same planet with those cousins. And especially Bhima. I want to kill him. And I have a plan how to kill him. I'm going to poison him. And I just want your acknowledgement. You don't have to do anything. I'll do the whole diabolical deed myself. I've got a whole plan. And Duryodhan, Dhritarashtra said, how is this possible? Pandu, when I was very young, and he was my younger brother, and I was blind, he cared for me. Every day I couldn't see anything. I was fully dependent upon Pandu. And now here's his sons. And you want to kill his sons? No! I can't approve of this plan. But Duryodhan knew how to maneuver his father. If they are on the same planet as me, then I'll give up my life. You don't have to do anything. Just know that I'm going to kill Bhima. And knowing the heartstrings of his father, that his father was so attached to his sons, he wouldn't interfere. If it meant losing his sons in order to maintain integrity and honesty and truthfulness and virtue, he would cave in. And so he remained silent. And when Dhritarashtra remained silent, Duryodhan knew he had his father right where he wanted him, and kept, and he unfolded the whole plan. And after the attempt to kill Bhima, of poisoning Bhima, and all the Pandavas and the whole entourage came back from that summer place minus Bhima, the Pandavas, and Kunti said, where's your other brother? Oh, he's coming later. He was tired from eating too much. When he wakes, he'll come. Everything will be all right. But he didn't come. And he didn't come. And he didn't come for a long time, so Kunti was in big anxiety. So Kunti went to Vidura. Vidura, you're the dear well-wisher of the Pandavas. What am I to do? How am I to understand this situation? My dear son, powerful Bhima, may be in great danger. Who knows? Maybe he's gone. Maybe he's dead. And Vidura spoke very simply. Vidura said, don't worry. Vyasa said, when he pronounced about these sons that they will be filled with virtue, they'll live a long duration of life, and they will rule this planet. Because Vyasa has spoken this way, you need not have any concern. Vyasa is Trikalagya. He can see past, present, and future perfectly well. Vyasa would never utter anything other than the truth. Kunti, please be assured everything is all right. And just from hearing Vidura speak in that way, Kunti was fully pacified. All of her anxiety, distress, concern passed just from hearing from Vidura. There's great potency in the messages that come from very elevated saintly personalities. And here, Yudhisthira Maharaj has just delivered this, at Yudhisthira's request, this very elaborate and very eloquent and very detailed treatise on how to become perfect in the different varnas and ashrams and the whole way of spiritual life. The whole training has been laid out for him. And now at the end of that wonderful exposition, he's indicating Krishna is the personality of God at the source of this whole varna and ashram system. Chatur varna maya srishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Krishna has created it all because he's the source of everything. He's the absolute truth. Just by hearing that from Narada, how qualified Narada was, but also how qualified was Yudhisthira, just by hearing that covering of the intimacy of their relationship was removed, and he could see Krishna as the personality of Godhead, just by hearing. Very, very important, very potent is this process of hearing. And how is it, now speaking of the world in general, how is it to be established that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Absent that message being spoken, by default, people will reach different conclusions, isn't it? I'll give two recent experiences that I had that on the one sense aggravated me very much, in the other sense inspired me very much, that we need to, this message of Krishna as the personality of Godhead needs to be profusely disseminated. I had an experience around the end of September, beginning part of October. I think at the end of September, I was visiting in Detroit at Fisher Mansion. And it wasn't planned on my part, but it just happened to be the time that I was visiting coincided with a function that the devotees at Fisher Mansion were taking part in. One Piece, P-E-A-C-E. And it was being promoted by this man from, well, two people. Primarily a man from Lanka, Sri Lanka, who has his own international society for something or other. And it wasn't Krishna consciousness. And Dr. Ari da-da-da-da-da-da something. So everyone just called him Dr. Ari. You know, for short. So he has tens of thousands of followers. He has something like 8,000 or 9,000 villages in Sri Lanka that follow his ism. And his ism, so I didn't know what it was about, but he's here to promote his ism and in the name of peace. But really, he came to America to get some money to go back to Sri Lanka and do more of his thing. So I was invited to be a co-speaker, Dr. Ari and myself. And as I heard him speaking, I could understand the characterization of his position is he is a Gandhian Buddhist. Interesting blend. Gandhian in the sense of his message was self-help, you know, you have communal assistance of people, somebody builds a house and somebody cuts the tree, somebody grows the crops, somebody weaves the cloth, and you help one another, you build schools together, and the Gandhian movement, you know, whatever your talent is, you do that for the welfare of others. God somehow disappears. And then Buddhism. God definitely disappeared. He didn't even appear to disappear. He just disappeared. So he was spinning his... He was speaking first and I was speaking second and spinning his whole thing about, you know, how wonderful he is, how many people he's helping and how many villages and how many schools and how many. Then he described how they have their, when they have their school building session or, you know, community help session, they get together and have a prayer. And I was wondering what the prayer was going to be. And he said the prayer is to use our, not calling upon anybody, but just, you know, praying that we can use our talents to help one another and build a nice community here in this village. And that was their sadhana. And then they would do karma yoga. Well, not even karma yoga, just karma. Like collective karma. And I was feeling really uncomfortable. Here we are at Prabhupada's place, Fisher Mansion, inviting this guy to speak his blah, blah, blah story about Krishna disappears. Now I'm supposed to say something after this guy. And I knew it's not cool, you don't insult him. But, I have to speak Krishna. So I just spoke about Prabhupada and what Prabhupada established Krishna as the personality of Godhead and explained everything needs to be centered on Krishna. I did it with PowerPoint and graphics and so on. We need this center rather than the whole talk of what I gave, the peace formula. What is the essence of the peace formula? Recognizing Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshram Suradam Sarva Bhutanam, and passed out copies of peace formula, and it was like at least 25 times it was Krishna. And people, and without clearly acknowledging Krishna, then even you establish a community. I gave example of communes when I was in college days. Communes was a very popular thing, communal living. But after some time, without the center being real, the center of Krishna, then the idea of community would shift, because everything needs to be anchored to Krishna, because he's the source of everything. What is the source of everything? Everything gets offered back to the source of everything. That's Bhoktaram Yogatapasam. And it's Krishna, the personality of Godhead. And he had this, a whole group of his wealthy American people that were funding this man to do his thing. They were going, yeah, they never heard about Krishna, the personality of Godhead. But it made sense to them. Everything doesn't come from nothing. Everything comes from person, and there's intelligence behind everything. And our message of Krishna is the personality of Godhead. It had an impact. And if as devotees we don't give that message, by default it's going to be this blend, a smoothie of no personality of Godhead in the picture. And another quick example, because looking at the clock, is a trend in the world, in the real world that's surrounding us, is people being very concerned about the failure of the economy. So consumer economics has its big problems. So I've been riding that wave and speaking in colleges, and have a presentation that's called Spiritual Economics. And it's not our phrase, it's one of the economist's phrase. He's written books, and there's the title of it, Spiritual Economics. So it's very easy to show just 2 weeks ago, I was at Intel in Portland with, an auditorium filled with Intel workers during their lunch hour, making a presentation on spiritual economics. It was very interesting. The feedback was very interesting, too. So to show where the problems are in consumer economics is very easy. So this, that, 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 and now what's the alternative? We look at green economics, and that's good, but it's not sufficient. It doesn't get at the root of the problem. This insatiable desire to consume green, and it's okay. It's still not enough of the planet to consume green at the rate of consumption. It's not sufficient. So spiritual economics. So going back to the problem side, there's a professor, there's a whole bunch of research that's been conducted by economists in the field of why consumer economics is debilitating. So there was one particular professor that I had done some studies, and there had been some communication with that professor directly. So he just forwarded to me, this was 2 days ago, he just forwarded to me an article that he had, of a paper he had delivered somewhere on, does Buddhism, are Buddhism and consumerism compatible? So he doesn't get it either, because Krishna's missing. There's Dr. Ari and there's this professor, somebody or other, and Krishna's missing. Now, how is Krishna going to get into the picture? Because there is a source of everything. Like, even, you know, if Yudhisthira Maharaj doesn't understand it, what to speak of people in general? And how are the people in general going to get it? By the same method Yudhisthira got it, by hearing from a qualified person. And, you know, in the end of this Intel presentation, there was some focus on, I made some focus on communities that are dedicated to that principle of Krishna's at the center and finding our economic sustenance directly from things that Krishna supplies us. And their comment was, this is very good for an isolated few, but what about people in general? And I gave them two answers, and it's the same, it's to end the class with this point. It takes example-setting personalities to show this is how it can be done. And then persons can decide if they want to learn from that example or not. But there has to be example. It has to be the real deal, the real thing. Because otherwise, it's just a lot of talk that really doesn't mean anything. So we have to be example-setting personalities. Our communities have to be example-setting. Our families have to be example-setting. Our hearts have to be example-setting. Because otherwise, all the message we give, people look at it and go, you know, I'm not interested. But for the mass of people in general, this is the marathon time for a reason. It's a time when we emphasize the importance of book distribution, that people should receive this understanding. We can't have a long Bhagavad Gita class with everybody that we meet, but we can give people a book, and inside the book is multiple Bhagavad Gita classes. It's the full presentation of the message of pure devotional service. And pure devotional service unto Krishna, and why? And it's compelling. It's compelling. The message of pure devotional service in Prabhupada's teachings, of course, the texts are Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita verses, and then Prabhupada's purports. And through Prabhupada's teaching, Krishna as the personality of Godhead can be heard, as Yudhisthira is hearing from Narada. And people may or may not go the whole distance and accept Krishna as the personality of Godhead. But they may go the whole distance, or at least go significant distance towards that conclusion. Now, I would assume that Dr. Ari, somebody or other, is probably too late for him to read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is and, you know, do a U-turn. But there are certainly people, I would imagine this professor, you know, is there compatibility between consumerism and Buddhism? If you were to hear Prabhupada's message, it would influence this thinking person. And there's many thinking persons in the world, and we're the messengers of that message of Srila Prabhupada, to deliver the message that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should worship him because of that. And be happy in, as Yudhisthira is in ecstasy, not just because he's his relative, but he's the personality of Godhead, and I have the opportunity to directly approach him and worship him. So, the very nice invitations that Mukhya is giving, very, you know, encouraging, pleasant exchanges to encourage everyone to distribute books. It's a wonderful time, wonderful opportunity to do our little part to give the message of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, to people in general. And collectively, I'll just end with this. When I was in college and practicing Krishna consciousness on my own and decided that I should live in a temple, one of the reasons that propelled me to live in a temple was the understanding that what can one little guy do alone? But collectively, many persons can make a big impact on this world. And that was Prabhupada's plan. He had temples for that reason. So here you have one of those temples. Collectively, we can make a big impact. Individually, what's our little effort? But collectively, it's very, very powerful. To at least give people the opportunity to hear the message of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and take whatever steps they're prepared to take after hearing Prabhupada's message to them. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any comments? Ramiya?
Hi, Deb. I was just wondering if you could help me understand what happens, you know, like in a primitive society. As Prabhupada explained, there's a nature to recognize a higher power, a higher force. So what is it that happens that people now want to cut God out and as they grow, let's say, more civilized?
It's comfortable. It's recognized, you know, in their estimation, it's like mode of goodness, but I don't have any commitment. I'm not responsible to anybody or accountable to anybody. I don't have to surrender. I just have to be good. In one Buddhist literature tract that I happened to pick up, it was like one of those boxes highlighted what's like the main message. The highest truth is nonviolence. I mean, even what is truth, according to the Vedic conception? Truth is that from which things come. So that even that concept they don't have. But you know, the highest truth is nonviolence. It's no commitment. You know, it's and I make up rules as I go along. In this thing in Detroit. Adi Raj was in the audience. You know Adi Raj. So Adi Raj asked, guess what question, you know, about vegetarianism. So to Dr. Ari, he said, you know, if we're going to speak about peace in this world, he gave the, you know, the classic Adi Raj question. It's because he's very much into protection of animals and vegetarianism, promotes it at every opportunity. So if we're going to promote peace in this world, those entities that are put under the care of the human society, if we kill them and eat them, isn't there a more simple way than that one to correct violence and bring peace into this world? The message that you're giving us is nonviolence. Would you agree that vegetarianism should be followed by everybody? And Dr. Ari gave a short answer. He said, that would be the best. If people could live like that, that would be best. That's all he said. Like, you know, there's next best and there's next best. Because the higher principle is not violence, the higher principle is something else. You know, work together in the Gandhian spirit and build communities. So, when God is the personality of God, or the authority of the personality of God, it is missing, you can be as wishy-washy as you like. There's no standard. You know, one person's idea of nonviolence is another person's idea of violence. Dalai Lama, when he was, there was some thing in Washington, D.C., to, you know, a rally, and he was invited, you know, give Tibet back to the Buddhists. And he came to stay, and it was in the New York Times. They brought him a vegetarian meal. He said, take it away, I want veal. And people, his followers were saying, what? I want veal. But you're Buddhist. Your message is nonviolence. Not my brand of nonviolence. I want veal. Hare Krishna. This Dalai Lama. You know, he's how high can you get? And yadyadacharati shrestas, and that's nonviolence. So there's no authority. That's a high ideal that just is wherever you want to set it. It's popular, you know. That's what's attractive. And then there's a sense of happiness of the mode of goodness that one becomes conditioned by. I feel good. And the leader convinces other people we're making other people feel good. So let's support it. Give me your money so I can do more of the same. No commitment. No authority. Independence. Misuse of independence. Anything else? Yeah. That's certainly one of the things that attracts people.
And Krishna consciousness is also supposed to be non-sectarian.
Correct.
So, what is it in our presentation that
makes people think that we are?
Yeah.
It's different persons may give a different answer to your question. One of the answers I would give is we don't walk our talk, or, you know, we haven't realized, we haven't come to the stage of realization of what our message is, and so they're perceiving our behaviors and our speech more than what our message is. But the message of non-sectarian is everybody is, who is disqualified by material standards? No one is disqualified. Everyone is eligible. But that because everyone is eligible, then you have a room full of eligible people that aren't qualified. You know, that aren't manifesting by realization and by character and by quality the message itself. So we move around in this, you know, carrying the message but not acting the message, not living the message. I invite someone else in the room to respond to this question. Why is it that we're perceived as being sectarian? Because we behave that way, is my message. We're not sufficiently purified according to what the teaching actually is. Sure, all kinds of people perceive us that way. Other religious groups perceive us as that way. In part, one of the reasons they perceive us that way is we don't mix so freely with the other groups. We hold ourselves aloof or sectarian.
Question that that certainly we are the most non-sectarian religion, and proof is in the pudding, proof is in the books. And all they have to do, whoever claims that we are sectarianism, well, that may be my individual fault at the individual level, but His Divine Grace and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are the most non-sectarian leaders. Another thing, Maharaj, I wanted to add to your about
about our spirit in New Raman Reti for book distribution of Prabhupada. Last week, I and my wife had good fortune to distribute Prabhupada's books for 7 days in St. Augustine. And suddenly it dawned to me that these books are available to me by just asking and paying to Mother Akuti and Mother Mukhya. And I said, such a short time ago, in 1965, when His Divine Grace had come, there were no books. Not only that, He had to put a philosophy in print, but He had to make every effort to put those philosophy and His interpretation of that philosophy in the book. And that He had to find people who will finance, who will help Him in publishing those books, and also printing at a mass scale. So how easy my job was last week, that I did not have to think about the books, I did not have to print them, or I find a publisher, they were right there in plenty, and all I had to do was find people and somehow convince them, please, this was my salvation, maybe it will be your salvation. And so just as a thanks, deep-hearted, deep-seated thanks of my fortune to trying to disseminate this philosophy in 2008 is so much easier than Maharaj, including your good self, in 60s and 70s when these books were hardly available. But they were being available. So I think any question coming from anybody which is not according to our philosophy, in my humble opinion, is based on ignorance, and books are the basis. We have to distribute as many as possible. Thank you, Maharaj.
Krishna, you have something? Two more questions, one here, one in the back, and then we'll end. Here's the microphone. Oh, it doesn't work. Okay. Yeah. No. It Sri Lanka, what we heard was it's a very divided country, violent, battles between individuals and groups of individuals and intense politics and bloodshed. So just providing for the basic needs of people. He went through a whole thing when the tsunami came and how many people mobilized to help people put their lives back together, and his wife, who had some 5 children, now has 8,000 orphans that she's the mother of. She's like, big mama taking care of so many kids. And we're doing so many things to help people. So it's not birth, death, old disease, and old age. One devotee, one of the Detroit devotees asked some question like that. But, he just like, same way he did the other one, he didn't address it, he just went around it. So there was no conception of the soul, no conception of God. And he used the word explicitly, philanthropy, and call it Gandhian Buddhism. And, give me your money so I can do more of it. Yes, in the back? Mataji? There's no microphones, you just gotta, raise your voice. People perceive us as sectarian.
Yeah. My personal feeling is that Because everybody wants to receive. So I know I'm guilty of the same thing. We become imploded and we become more concentrated on our own little units instead of how can we turn our attention towards the masses of people. And when we're unselfish like that, I think people automatically, they can't perceive us as a sect because we're constantly giving. Anyway, that was my personal realization.
I'd like to respond. My conviction is that we were perceived as a sect when we were doing that. Also, I mean, we were labeled as a sect. We were labeled as a dangerous sect by the media and by, some court cases to identify us in that way. And so I appreciate the point that you're making, that is, if we're reaching out to people and meeting them on their ground, and then we're not cloistered and isolating ourselves in that sense sectarian, we're giving. I got your message. But if we would had there was immaturity in how we were giving, and that was labeling us as a sect by those who were calling us as a sect. So it's the I'm okay, but if we look at Prabhupada as the example, then like Advaita Acharya was saying, this is the least sectarian thing there is. Look at Lord Chaitanya's teachings and Lord Chaitanya's example, and the teachings hold the non-sectarian view, but we're not walking it. We're talking it, but we're not walking it. We're not living it. But we're not mature examples of that teaching. That's my perspective. And so the maturity, absent maturity, we appear to be sectarian. We can't mix with people that are of different views, because it has to be our view dominating your view. Otherwise, we're going to have nothing to do with you. Mandrini?
The UF student newspaper last year, and it showed up one of those proselytizing Christians, you're going to hell, turn and burn, he's preaching on campus. And then right alongside it showed the Krishna lunch people saying next. And so it was a perception of us as being living our beliefs rather than just
good.
Out there.
Good. And then when they start to, after getting some appreciation of the Krishna lunch, then they need to meet devotees that represent the message by their behavior, by their speech, by their qualities. That's, the internal manifesting of the message of Krishna consciousness will help us to go a long way to help us to be perceived as not sectarian, because otherwise it will appear otherwise. This is a hook to get people in to do, our thing. Yeah, how can I say no?
Thank you very much, Hare Krishna Maharaj. I also have an opinion of this, because I think no matter how pure you are and how you're walking it and how you're doing it, if it's something that people are afraid of, they label it and they put it down. Like we were passing out beer and veal, they'd probably love us for that, because they wouldn't, they're not, you know, people are innately envious of God. And I find in my sankirtan that I was standing on California with Vaish last week, and I gave the lady the book, and she looked at it, and she said, "I have a problem with this." I was showing her pictures, and she said, "It says Lord," and she said, "It says Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, Lord, what's all this Lord? I'm an atheist." And I said, "Fine, you can be an atheist. This is," she said, "this is religion. I don't want it." I said, "Well, this is a science. It's a spiritual science that just reveals the difference between the body and the self." And she was just, I had convinced her to buy the book anyway. Somehow or other, she took a Krishna book after telling me she didn't like all this Lord, Lord, Lord stuff. But I just told her, just forget that. Just read it. It's a storybook. It's nice. We're talking about peace and harmony. And she bought it, you know, and she said, "Oh, all right." And I said, "When you're done with it, share it with a friend." But I really believe that when you knock on somebody's door and you come out there and you give them a pizza, you know, they love you. If you knock on the door and you give them something that says, you know, your life could use a little improvement, then immediately the knee-jerk reaction is, "Oh, these are crazy people." And I saw it with Vaish, who's one of the purest preachers. He knocked on the door and the lady opened the door, and as soon as she saw him, she just started yelling at him, "Get out of here, what is this?" And then she called the cops on us. You know, so to me, no matter how saintly you are, because people, Prabhupada couldn't have been any purer or more saintly, and people still didn't like the details of what, just like you said about Dalai Lama, people think he's a great leader and his whole thing is supposed to be ahimsa, and he doesn't even eat vegetarian food. I mean, it's really deeply rooted. People are so envious. The living entity wouldn't be here if he wasn't envious. So the knee-jerk reaction is, "Oh, not God, anything but that." So he said, "Well, it's a yoga club we're starting here on the campus. Don't worry about the Lord thing." And then she, you know, okay.